The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to take you on a Viking journey that not even Sir Walter Scott could have dreamed up. We're going to tell you that when the holidays change, so should your approach when it comes to college basketball tournaments. And every once in a while, there'll be a special set of circumstances where more actually could be a little less.
Well, Dave, we're getting fired up. We were talking about it before the show. Monster weekend over Christmas. Next week, everything going. NBA and college hoops and NFL and college football. It's going to be money time all the time on the show next week as we break down games. But off a Wednesday night, you got something you want to talk about for your first take, don't you?
Actually, it's one we can have an awful lot of fun with. If you went back to our Monday postmortem, talking about the Temple, Texas basketball game Saturday. One, interestingly enough, we have not heard back from the NCAA or the Big 12 about just how bad the officiating was. But here's how it works in your to your advantage. When there's a bad result in sports, that tends to mean there's going to be false lines going forward. So what can you take out of Saturday's game? You come back and you bet on Temple against Rice Monday night, and you win. And, of course, you come back and play against Texas with North Carolina last night. Our only problem is we didn't play quite enough on that game. Never really any doubt about that point spread. Even when Texas was flirting with the cover, you could see that team is clearly not ready to play at that level yet. Someone did write in and ask about how we work with that conundrum going forward. Keep in mind, it's not an issue anymore with Texas because now Texas will be in conference play. You're going to get okay officiating there. It's just in these non-conference games when the money doesn't add up on the other team in the equation where we're going to have those concerns going forward. Teddy, busy time. Baby's first Christmas coming up. But before we get to that, your first take.
Yeah, who's worried about Christmas, man? I'm worried about cashing some winners right now. And last night I cast about as ugly a dog as you'll ever find. Louisiana Monroe plus the points against Indiana State. It's an ugly, ugly game. With 8 minutes left, La Monroe's got 22 points on the scoreboard. Four-fifths of the game gone, they got 22 points. And they cast a ticket. And that speaks a little bit to, I certainly want to talk about, I know that a lot of you out there, beginning bettors, guys who have just getting into it. There's certainly plenty of intermediate and advanced level bettors who watch this show, but there are plenty of guys who are just getting their feet wet in terms of betting on sports. And we like this show to be a resource for you. And one of the things that's kind of difficult to do when you're first starting to bet is the concept of, you know, you hold your nose and you make a bet, you know. And underdogs, ugly underdogs in particular, and unders, oftentimes they're hold your nose and bet type of wagers. My thought process last night, Indiana State's not the kind of team that should be laying 17 or 18 or 19 points. They're just not built to win by margin. So what do? You hold your nose. You say this point spread is based on power ratings, and it is mathematically where it should be, but the matchups don't actually work out that way. And again, ugly dog, cashed a ticket, made some money. It has to become a part of your betting repertoire at times to say, oh, my God, this team stinks. I don't want any part of them, but, ooh, this point spread's just a little bit too high. Yeah, there's value there. Not pretty to watch, not really enjoyable to watch, but you know what's fun? Putting money in your pocket, and that's what you're able to do with that ugly underdog last night. Well, first take done. Dave, let's move over to Market Watch. We have to talk about Kobe Bryant a little bit. Kobe sat out last night and listed now as questionable for the opener against Chicago on Sunday. All the money has poured in on the Bulls over the course of the last 48 to 72 hours. At one point, Lakers laying 2.5, 3 points. Now Chicago the favorite. The betting market doesn't think Kobe's going to play.
It's going to be a question not just for Sunday, but really for the entirety of the Laker season. Kobe has a torn ligament in his right wrist, shooting wrist. You can repair that with surgery, but they say that on its own, it will heal over time. What you cannot afford to do is have any more contact to make it worse. He's choosing to play through it. But if you're the Lakers, what do you do with this? You already know that Andrew Bynum is going to be suspended for the first 5 games. On a shorter schedule, that's a significant chunk. So when you talk about the big deal for Dwight Howard, some of these other blockbusters that were floating around there, do you dare gamble on anything knowing that Kobe's wrist could get worse? Or if the season opens the wrong way, you may say, you know what, we're not going anywhere this year. Shut it down, have surgery on that wrist, come back fresher next year. It's going to be fascinating to watch what the Lakers do over the next couple of games, but it's not going to be the Lake Show we're accustomed to seeing in Los Angeles. We've talked about the Lakers Clippers many times on the show already this week. Clearly, the Lakers, number two of teams who host games in the Staples Center. Clippers is a play on? Yeah, we're going to talk about them a little bit when we get to Money Time tomorrow, but for now, the Lakers don't look like they bring that swagger we're accustomed to seeing.
Well, look at the starting lineup for the Lakers last night. You have Derek Fisher, Jason Capono, Andrew Bynum, who's not going to be there for, as you mentioned, the first 5 games of the regular season, Pau Gasol, and Devin Ebanks. That's not a killer starting five. That's not a starting five of a team that, you know, maybe playoff worthy, not championship worthy. So we look at the Lakers and what they might want to do down the line. They even want to make a blockbuster deal? Is this, especially if Kobe's going to miss some time? You know, L.A. right now, not a lot of tradable assets. You know, Powell can go somewhere. Bynum can go somewhere. But when you look up and down this roster, there's not a bunch of players that opposing teams are clamoring and saying, oh, yeah, I want this guy. Oh, yeah, I want that guy. The talent level isn't there in L.A. They don't have assets to make a blockbuster deal anymore. The trade of Odom looks worse and worse and worse as every day passes. I think it might be a long season at the Staples Center for one of the two teams. And that team, of course, is the team that everyone's betting against right now, those L.A. Lakers. But let's shift focus a little bit here in Market Watch, Dave, and talk about some of the college basketball tournaments over this Christmas weekend. Now, we're not going to see anything Christmas Eve. We're not going to see much on Christmas Day. But certainly over the course of the next couple of days, hey, we've got a great tournament right here in Las Vegas at the Orleans Arena. There's a tournament in Maui that we need to discuss. And certainly the approach to these Christmas and New Year's tournaments, very different from the approach that we see over Thanksgiving.
Yeah, back on the air in November, we were telling you that in those early season tournament games, a lot of times teams were just trying to play their way into shape, put a rotation together, not a lot of pressure on actually winning the games. It's a different story this week now, and that's why our focus is going to be a little bit different. For almost all these teams, this is the last dress rehearsal before conference play begins. You want to put your best out there. You want to win these games right now. You're not playing that much for rotations anymore. You're playing to win. So make sure you adjust accordingly, that some of these sloppy, out-of-the-way dogs that we would use in November, because we knew the favorite wasn't really coming to play, we're not really looking that way anymore. These teams are going to play very, very hard. I mean, we're so lucky here in Las Vegas, right down the street, teams like Baylor, St. Mary's, West Virginia, Missouri State, all four of which have legitimate chances to get into the NCAA tournament. Not only are they playing to win tonight, but they're knowing that these games tonight and tomorrow could really matter for that tournament selection committee come March. So different focus this time. These are teams playing to win for no other purpose. Win the game, play the best you can, make sure you do that.
And a great night to be a sports fan in Las Vegas. Obviously, we have the Las Vegas, what's called the Mako Bowl. Who knows? The Las Vegas Bowl with Boise State and Arizona State. Of course, we're going to break that down in Money Time later in the show. We have the tournament at the Orleans. That's going all afternoon and evening. And, you know, if you want to see live action, Vegas is a good place to be today. You don't have to be sitting in the sports book to get your Jones. You can go and get your fix at the games themselves. So that's a lot of fun. Although, Dave, I know both you and I, we're going to be working. I'm not going out. Maybe tomorrow night I might get down to the Orleans. I would really like to see some of the teams play there, but tonight, unfortunately, that's not going to happen. But we talk about tournaments and the tournament's beginning. Let's talk about how the tournaments end, because one thing that you always want to be aware of in these tournament situations where teams are playing 2 games in 2 days, 3 days, 3 games in 3 days, etc., look at the depth issues. The teams that go 10 or 12 deep, the teams whose stars and starters are only playing 28 or 30 or 32 minutes, they have a big edge as the tournament progresses over those teams that don't have the depth, have 6 or 7 man rotations, are playing starters 35 minutes plus. Be aware of those minutes. They take their toll, especially as tournaments get into that game number two or game number three.
So later on today's show, we've got a couple of tournament settings that we think you're going to be able to cash on. In fact, Money Time's Play of the Day is going to come out of a unique tournament setting. So we'll lay some of that out for you. Tomorrow, we'll come back with some of the, we call them the round two games from teams that are playing tonight. But we want to set that tempo through all of these neutral site games next week, different than what we told you about back in November.
All right, guys. Keep those emails coming. Remember, this is your show, and we're going to talk about what you want us to talk about. You want something on air? Tell us. Send us an email, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter and interact with us that way. Interact with us that way at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, get involved, you know? There's a whole covers.com community going on right now, active threads and discussions. Become a part of it. Covers.com/posting forum.
When we come back, could I hit Teddy on a post pattern against the Viking defense? You know what? In the postmortem, show you that there's a lot of openings. Maybe we could pull it off. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Watching a player getting ready to catch a pass against the Minnesota Vikings has been about as commonplace as anything in the NFL over the past 2 months, as Minnesota's gone 0-6 straight up, covering only one point spread during that span since beating Carolina back on Halloween weekend. This is not a major story by any stretch of the imagination, yet it probably should be. As we get into the final weeks of this NFL season, much of the focus goes on teams fighting for playoff positioning. This is where most bettors focus their sights, and the odds makers spend extra time on the games where playoff contenders are battling, knowing the volume of wagering on those games will dwarf those between two teams that are heading for the exit after week 17. Bad versus bad teams simply don't draw a lot of money. They don't draw a lot of betting attention, especially with bowl games and baskets going on. But if you're serious about making money, watching and paying attention to some of these bad teams can produce that result for you. You can put money in your pocket. It matters, you know, every bit as much as teams that are still in the playoff hunt. And when you can find an edge, you know, emerging stories don't get the same level of publicity that stories among playoff contenders tend to get. Like this one we're focusing on today in the postmortem, one that has reached truly historic levels, and yet one that nobody seems to be paying attention with, as we give us an opportunity to cash a ticket or two over the final two games of the regular season.
To say that the Minnesota pass defense is a mess right now would actually be an understatement. We're talking about something not only at a new historical level, but it would go beyond what we would have thought possible from a mathematical standpoint. Over the last nine games, let's break the numbers down for you. They've allowed 198 completions in 270 attempts, good for 25 touchdown passes and zero interceptions.
Oof.
25-0. Now, what is the passer rating when we incorporate the yardage in there? 131.3. Set that off to the side. Keep that in your mind. The all-time worst single-season record for pass defense, 110.8. That 131.3 is so far outside the realm of the worst pass defense ever that it's almost statistically impossible. Yet this is now nine games. It's over half of a season. The last Viking interception, you have to go back 541 minutes and 9 seconds of playing time, and it was against Richard Bartell, who likely will never throw another NFL interception because he's not likely to ever throw another pass. How does it happen? How does a team get to be this bad? How do the markets miss the perceptions on it? Injuries have taken their toll. They've lost 7 defensive backs out of their rotation. It's the most injuries we can ever recall from one team at that cluster spot. Because keep in mind, part of what makes a secondary work is its chemistry. Players knowing how to work together. It's not just talent, it's knowing how to trust each other. But when you're patching new faces in all the time, that just isn't possible. Who are the top 5 guys going to be in the Viking secondary rotation when they get to Washington this week? It's going to be Benny Sapp, Marcus Sherrills, Brandon Burton, Jamarcus Sanford, and Mistre Raymond. You may have only heard of Benny Sapp. Out of that list, none of them were expected to play a big role with the Vikings when the season started. It's a situation that not only is very, very bad, but it might not be fixable. You've got guys who aren't necessarily NFL caliber. They don't know each other. They're not going to develop a chemistry. As bad as things have been for the Vikings, no reason to believe it gets any better the last 2 weeks. The rest of the markets, of course, focus on people like Tom Brady. Having another brilliant season, potential MVP candidate going head-to-head with Aaron Rodgers, maybe to the final snap of the year. And the Patriots have a lot going on this Sunday. They can clinch another home field advantage throughout the playoffs, something that means a lot to them. But here's what's been interesting. The markets have actually played against New England this week, despite the fact that Miami's only 5-9, heading nowhere, playing under an interim coach who apparently has no chance to be given the head coaching job. Why are the markets doing that? 2 reasons. One, we talked about in a postmortem 2 weeks ago. Miami's played very good football down the stretch. At one stretch, over a 6-game period, they had outscored their opposition by more than the Packers had over any 6-game stretch this season. So they played good football. Number 2, the New England defense. Historically bad for Bill Belichick team. Probably the worst group he's ever put out there. So yeah, people will play on a hot team. And they'll play against a bad defense when in the role of a big favorite. But sometimes football isn't about momentum or power ratings or overall stats. Sometimes football is about particular matchups. And it begs the question, are those guys playing Miami this week on the Ryan side of the equation?
No, I don't think so. Not my money going on the Dolphins. Again, opener of 10.5, bet down to 9.5. Patriots win by 10, and you bet New England today. You'll cash your ticket on New England. Now, Tom Brady, you remember back in week 1 when he just destroyed Miami? Probably single-handedly in that ballgame. There was a little goal line stand that had something to do with it. But Brady with a record-setting night on Monday Night Football in Miami back in week 1. But that's nothing new or different. He's had ridiculous rhythm against this Dolphins defense. Over the last 2 seasons, Patriots 3-0 straight up, 3-0 against the spread against the Miami Dolphins. They win those games by a combined score of 117-45. They beat the spread by 62 points in those 3 ball games. Tom Brady's numbers, 61 of 88 for 869 yards, 7 touchdowns, 1 interception, a passer rating of 122.8. And remember, that's despite the fact that he left a quarter and a half early in one of the blowout wins over Miami. He didn't even play the end of the third or the fourth quarter of a win against the Dolphins last year. New England already had 38 points on the scoreboard by the time he left the ballgame. Now, certainly going to be a tougher challenge for the Dolphins to cope with these X's and O's that Tom Brady brings to the table. They're making back-to-back trips up to the Northeast. They have to do it with one less day to prepare. Of course, it's not NFL Sunday this week. Remember, it's NFL Saturday this week, which means every team has a day less to prepare. Dolphins, yes, they're 5-2 in their last 7 ball games, but only one of those games came against an opponent with a winning record. That came against Dallas, an 8-6 Cowboys team, and that was one of the games the Dolphins lost during this stretch. There's nothing in Miami's current form that would indicate that they are ready to shut down a passing attack of this octane. That's why my money's not going to be on the Dolphins, especially now at this reduced price where you're not even get full value with Miami.
When we come back, the news you need to know in our Insider Six Pack.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, let's pop the top on today's Insider Six Pack. I'm going to start with some Purdue problems that are kind of bummed me out a little bit. I was looking at the Purdue side very closely in their bowl game against Western Michigan. Not sure if I'm going to get there. Here's why. The Purdue defense is certainly going to face a challenge against Western Michigan senior quarterback Alex Carter. It's an explosive Broncos offense that has moved the football well, even against BCS competition. And that task is getting tougher by the day, considering what's happening with that Purdue defense during this stretch leading up to the bowl game. Linebacker Dwayne Beckford, the team's leading tackler, he got suspended. He got a DUI. This is a third brush with the law. He's not going to play in this ballgame. So Purdue without their leading tackler for that Little Caesars Bowl. And two other starters, a linebacker Will Lucas and defensive end Gerald Gooden, they were arrested early in the week for removing the wheel locks on their car after they've been clamped on for unpaid parking tickets. I appreciate what they did. It kind of cracks me up. I give them all the power in the world. But now both spent Monday night in jail before being released. There's not yet been a formal announcement on whether they're going to play, but this could be cluster linebacker suspensions for the Purdue Boilermakers in their bowl game.
Guys, if you're going to college and you get wheel locks on your car, yeah, you're going to take them off and no one's going to notice. That's a little tough one to pull.
Oh, come on, Dave. I mean, look, in Ann Arbor, they went nuts for parking tickets. I mean, all they did was, you know, literally, you're 5 minutes late on a meter, you get a ticket. And there's meters everywhere along town. You couldn't help it. You hated the parking enforcement. And, yeah, I knew some people whose cars got booted, perhaps. And there were we certainly tried to find ways around it. But, you can't fight City Hall, right, Dave?
It just seems like it would be a difficult thing to get away with, because I'm assuming you've got these trackers on them.
Yeah.
Where someone's actually going to be watching you. It's a great little thing. I never fear anyone stealing my car, because there's that little tracking device saying, by the way, if you steal this car, we're going to know exactly where you are all the time. We'll actually be following you along. Kind of the same thing. Maybe not the kind of guys I want playing linebacker for my football team. Let's go to University of Pittsburgh, where the announcement's coming today that Paul Christ, currently the Wisconsin offense coordinator, becomes the new head coach. I think a great move by Pittsburgh. We've talked about a lot of these coaching transitions where some teams got stuck, some traded down. Boy, did Pittsburgh get lucky. They lose Todd Graham. Maybe that's good riddance, a guy who didn't necessarily fit the culture of football they were going to play there. But let's talk about Chris as a fit from a couple of different directions. First, the culture of Western Pennsylvania football. At Wisconsin, Chris, very good at setting up designs for power football and a lot of play action fakes with a quarterback moving in the pocket, taking advantage of that physical play to create some real good maneuvering opportunities. That fits in Western Pennsylvania, part one. So that's going to work well. But part two, you're going into the Atlantic Coast Conference now, a conference built more on speed and finesse than power football. The one thing we like as handicappers are contrasts. Gives us a lot to work with. I talk about the Service Academy teams all the time and how difficult it is to prepare for them. Teams like Georgia Tech in their league. When Joe Tiller first came to Purdue, the contrast he created in the Big Ten. Pittsburgh's going to be this once a year where teams in the ACC are going to have to line up and go against someone that plays power football. That could work well for Pitt, but it could particularly work well for us. Pittsburgh makes a good move with Paul Christ. What we don't know yet is if he'll stay with Wisconsin through the bowl game against Oregon. We hope to have that for you as early as tomorrow.
Oh, those Bruins. You know, we talked about the UCLA and whether it was a smart move by the Bruins to choose to go to a bowl game after they petitioned the NCAA for the ability to go ahead despite a losing record in the regular season because of that seventh loss in the Pac-12 championship game. Very disappointing end to the UCLA season, and there really hasn't been much good news from the Bruins as they approach their current bowl game. First, the transition to the new head coach, Jim Mora. It's already been a bit awkward. There's a team tradition at UCLA of, quote-unquote, going over the wall, where players, particularly seniors, skip out on a single practice. They stretch, and they hop the wall to get out of there. Well, Mora, I'm not about making threats, and I'll keep that between the players and myself, but I can tell you that my general feeling is that If they feel they might want to skip out of practice and jump over a wall, well, they might as well just keep on going. Looks like that tradition's at an end for UCLA. And of course, some players have already jumped the wall in terms of the bowl game versus Illinois. Safety Tony Dye, guard Albert Sid, linebacker Isaiah Bowens didn't make grades. They're all ineligible for the bowl game. Quarterback Richard Brayhout, who's the backup, but considering UCLA's inability to keep QBs healthy, he may have seen playing time in this ballgame. He's not going to. He got suspended for the ubiquitous violation of team rules. Interim head coach Mike Johnson, who doesn't seem all that thrilled to be coaching this ballgame. His quote, "We have to coach the guys who are going to be here. I can't worry about anything other than that."
Jim Larrañaga knows all about personnel difficulties. He's faced them at Miami in his first season, taking over the Hurricane program. Getting a little bit better for him. Garius Adams, still going to be out one more week, but he'll be back before they move into conference play. But Reggie Johnson, the big key cog inside for Miami, he came back against Florida Atlantic on Saturday. Not only came back, but midseason form. 15 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 block shots. So he's going to be a full factor real quickly. Here's a surprise, though, tonight when they take on Charlotte. Daquan Jones has actually been declared eligible. Now, he was ineligible for some of the same things that impacted their football team back earlier in the season. They weren't sure if he was going to play at all this year or when he'd be available, but he kept practicing with the team every day. Got his eligibility. Not only can he play tonight, it looks like he will. Now, the ruling didn't come in time for him to be on the team flight to Charlotte, but according to Assistant Athletic Director Chris Freet, quote, UM is going to do everything to get him up there for the game. Probably going to see Daquan Jones on the court, not in the starting lineup, but since he's been practicing with the team every day, should see a little bit out of him.
Boise State has struggled to an 0-3 straight up and 0-3 ATS tally on the road so far this season. The kind of growing pains you can have when half of the roster had never played a college road game entering the season. And quite frankly, it's something that head coach Leon Rice expected. Rice's quote, "It's the hardest thing to do in sports, win in college basketball on the road. And we're trying to do it with a young team that needs to learn how to do it. It's not going to get in any easier tonight for Boise against Iowa in Iowa City. Their leading scorer, Anthony Dermick, the only Bronco to average in double figures so far this season, he suffered a sprained ankle in Monday's win over Fresno State. They may not know until pregame warm-ups, whether he's going to be good to know. Dermack also leads the team in minutes played. He's second in assists. He's third in rebounds. We've seen money come on Iowa this morning, and if Dermack is announced as being out, expect more money to follow."
This is some tournament basketball now, and how we can use the travel schedule itself as a big factor in a game. Your late start tonight, Auburn playing at Hawaii, out there in the Diamond Head Classic. Look at the difficulties Auburn may have in terms of playing well. They had a home game against Florida A&M on Monday night. So it's not like they were able to get out to the islands early. It's a 12-hour trip from their campus. Had to spread that over the last 2 days. Now look at today. Since you've got 3 other games at this tournament site, you can't have a shoot-around. You don't get a chance to practice on that court. And the starting tip-off would be 1:30 a.m., on the Auburn body clocks, if it's even at 1:30. Remember, they're going to go after the Xavier-Long Beach State game. If that game extends a little bit or goes to overtime, it gets even worse. So look for Auburn to maybe have a little bit of difficulty with their legs tonight. Long trip, no chance to get settled in and practice in this arena at all, and a 1:30 a.m. starting time, something we might just come back to later in today's show.
When you say we might, they know that we will, Dave. Come on. But when we come back,
we can change our minds.
Yeah, that's true. We probably could. When we come back, we're going to break down the best that the college hardwoods has to offer on our first edition of Money Time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, I'm not going to raise a roof today. There's too much money time over the next week to be raising the roof every time. I'm just going to get hyped up because it is money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. We have Georgetown laying a little bit of a price right now, -5 against the Memphis Tigers. And these are two teams who played a classic in Maui last year, 78-78 at the end of regulation, 91-88 final. Georgetown wins in overtime. This time, we're not talking about a neutral site game. We are talking about a home game for the Georgetown Hoyas. But still, last year's game was a classic, Dave. We're going to see more of the same this time around?
Well, when you talk about close, let's look at the numbers of that first encounter. Shooting, 48.6% versus 49.2%. Slight edge to Memphis. Rebounds, 33-31. Slight edge to Georgetown. Where did the Hoyas win it? It was turnovers. They had 8 fewer. That made a big difference in the floor game. But where they also won it was inside, and a guy you're going to enjoy watching tonight if you haven't seen him play yet. Henry Sims, 6'10", 245 for Georgetown. When you see a guy that size, you think, okay, block shots, easy putbacks on offense, not much else. Well, he leads Georgetown in assists also. One of the best passing big men we've seen in college basketball in quite some time. Look at what he did in the first game against Memphis, because he might have been the deciding factor of any individual player on the court. 24 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists. The Memphis problem? They don't really have a natural counter for him. Memphis has a lot of athleticism, a lot of speed. They run the floor well, but they just don't have a great counter for a guy like Sims. So now here's the problem. When you don't have a counter for a big man, you have to double team. What's the worst thing to do against a big man that can pass the ball? Double team, because you're leaving someone open that Sims is likely to find. Maybe another big night for Sims and Georgetown.
And it's funny, when we look at these two teams, say over the last 3 or 4 years, I don't know that you're going to find two teams in all of college basketball, two programs in all of college basketball, that have underachieved to the level of talent they have. Memphis sending guys to the NBA every year. Georgetown, similar stuff. Yet the Georgetown style, it's so disciplined. It doesn't allow for players to create very much. It doesn't allow for a lot of freewheeling. And that disciplined style, it makes Georgetown able to win some games that they shouldn't, but it also gives them something of a disadvantage when they step up in class. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Hoyas have had problems stepping up in class in recent years, although this Hoyas team did go down to Alabama and notch a win earlier this season. That being said, Memphis is at the other end of the spectrum. The John Pastor era, it's all about undisciplined basketball. He recruits unbelievable athletes, and Memphis is loaded with guys who have that requisite level of talent and ability. But their style, you watch them play, it looks like they've never been on a basketball court together sometimes. Really haphazard approach. If you talked about why Georgetown won last year, they won because of the turnovers. Memphis continues to have turnover problems again this year. So kind of an interesting battle, an interesting conundrum between two teams that at some level have really underachieved and yet have done so through opposite type styles.
Let's go to St. Louis, the Missouri-Illinois matchup. Right now we're seeing Missouri a 7-point favorite. They call this one the battle for the Bush bragging rights. One of the most intense non-conference rivalries in the nation. You'll see a full house here tonight, packed with Missouri and Illinois alums. Both have a lot in the St. Louis area. Last couple years, though, we've seen a little bit of a gap develop in this series. Back-to-back double-digit wins by Missouri, largely because this same group has been developing a chemistry, played together for several years. Frank Haith, in fact, came in the right place at the right time with these Missouri upperclassmen. A group of kids that play awfully well together. Now it's one more time that Illinois faces a matchup that they may not like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this Missouri team, you look at them, 4 players averaging at least 12.6 points per game. As a team, 190 assists to 103 turnovers. They're shooting better than 40% from three-point range. They're shooting close to 78% from the free throw line. Statistically, this Missouri team has been really impressive so far this season. Of course, 5 different players have gotten into double-digit margins with the or double-digit stats with their steals for the season. So it's still, even under Frank Haith, a Missouri team that's going to pressure opposing teams, and a Missouri team that's going to create turnovers and easy fast break buckets. What have we seen from Illinois over the course of the last couple of weeks? Well, we saw the Illini get off to that 10-0 start, and everyone's saying, boy, Illinois, they didn't drop off. Again, this is a team that lost four starters from last year's squad, including the heart and soul. You know, Mike Davis on the inside, Dimitri McKamey on the outside. We went against Illinois in a play of the day last weekend and cast a right side winner with UNLV in that ball game. And now, here's an Illinois team that hasn't been able to compete with Missouri in the last couple of years, that isn't as good this year, and a Missouri team that has been somewhat overvalued by the betting markets because of that 10-0 start. The Illini on an 0-4 ATS slide, failing to cover by an average of more than 10 points per game.
So it looks like we've got a little lean to the favorite, and we do in this one. Ordinarily, we don't lay points in this type of rivalry, especially when the gap in athleticism isn't that wide, but it's the gap in basketball smarts and chemistry right now. But I'll tell you what stands out more than anything else. You go back to those last two meetings, the Missouri double-digit wins. Both of those games, Illinois won the boards in double figures, a combined plus 24 in rebounding. They had a big size edge. They won the boards, still got blown out on the court. This year, they don't have that rebounding advantage anymore. Don't be surprised if Missouri gets this win to double figures for the third straight year.
Let's go across town to the Orleans Arena right here in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas, Nevada, where the Baylor Bears, -4 on this neutral site environment against St. Mary's. And Baylor, they've been pretty impressive, and even more impressive since getting Perry Jones III back in the lineup. I think Baylor's always better with some guy who's the third in their lineup. Doesn't matter if it's Robert Griffin, Perry Jones. They just want thirds. You look at what they did on the road at Northwestern. Remember, Northwestern hadn't lost before or since. Baylor went to Northwestern, and they blew the Wildcats off the floor. Whether they win that game by 24, 26 points, wasn't close. Was over by halftime. We saw Baylor in their last tough test this past weekend against BYU, and a BYU team that came to play, a BYU team that was hitting three-pointers, a BYU team that had a rocking crowd at the Marriott Center going nuts. What did Baylor do? Well, they trailed by margin. They were getting out-rebounded. Second half, they find a way to win the game and snap BYU's non-conference winning streak. Baylor's been impressive so far, no question about it, Dave.
Impressive enough that they're now rated #6 in the polls. And what we want to see from them the next two nights is there that final four talent level? Because you get so far on balance and on team play, do you have those big-time players? And they just might have them. You know, Teddy had talked about Perry Jones, shooting 69% from the field, averaging 16.2 points per game, great inside threat. But then look at the rest of the team, shooting over 42% from three-point range. They can go inside out. They can defend you. 80 block shots as a team already. They can do an awful lot of things right. So the question is, can they step up to that little higher level? Good test for them tonight and tomorrow. Now, one of the things we'll talk about in advance, Teddy talked about depth in tournaments. Baylor has a lot of it. No one on this team averages more than 30 minutes per game. When they play West Virginia tomorrow night, a game we might not have enough time to break down in tomorrow's show because we're going to be so loaded up, look for that depth because West Virginia is a little bit shallow there. But if there's a problem that Baylor faces tonight, they're going to play a team that's also hard-nosed, also tough, but a team that just might be a little more comfortable across town than the Bears are going to be.
Oh, no question about it. St. Mary's has a couple edge in this ballgame. One, of course, they're playing with revenge. They didn't just get beaten by Baylor in the NCAA tournament last year. They got annihilated. They got embarrassed in that ballgame. A 20-plus point loss for St. Mary's against Baylor. Now they get a second try at a team that probably kept them awake through many sleepless nights over the summer and fall. So certainly St. Mary's has this game circled. The other thing that St. Mary's brings to the equation is that they come to Vegas. They're used to being here in Las Vegas. The West Coast Conference Tournament gets played here at the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas every spring. So they bring that, the edge of having been here before, because there are definitely some players, some people who come to Las Vegas and lose all control. You wouldn't expect that from the St. Mary's Gales this evening.
When we come back, instead of the nice arena over at the Orleans, we're going to take you way out of town to the decrepit, crumbling, please somebody knock it down, Sam Boyd Stadium. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from TalkTales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Let's go to the Las Vegas Bowl. Boise State minus 14. We're starting to see some 14 and a halves pop up out there. If you do like the Boise side, I wouldn't wait to get to the betting window. I don't expect a rush of Arizona State money between now and kickoff. But we'll call it Boise minus 14 total in this game, 66 and a half. And obviously, if you've never been to Vegas, you've never been to Sam Boyd Stadium, let's just say it's not one of the nicer venues in college football. There's talk about an on-campus venue. This one's a good 10 miles off campus, all the way out on the east side of town. UNLV doesn't draw well. Boise might draw a little bit better. Arizona State, nah. Are they even going to show up for this game, Dave?
That's a difficult question to answer. Dennis Erickson coaching his last game, because of the disconnect he's had with his team, there's not this big emotional, let's go win this for the coach sort of thing. You almost, if you're Erickson, wondered if you could say, let me retire a game early. Let someone else take this. We don't want to have to go up against Boise. Because here's your classic confrontation of precision and class against raw athleticism that is just so exceedingly raw. Arizona State tried to talk a good game this year. We're going to clean up our act. We know we have the talent to get to the Rose Bowl. We're going to play with precision. They didn't do it. Penalties were still there. Sloppy play was still there. I mean, athletically, you're not going to see any gap. When you watch the first quarter of this game tonight, there are going to be moments where you think, why is one team 14 over the other? Well, it's all about class and about polish. But now a little bit of a conundrum on the Boise side. Because if this were a BCS game or if the national championship were at stake, yeah, we'd have some 14 in our pockets. But here's the problem. Is Boise happy to be here? It's the third time on this field in 12 months. Not a whole lot of excitement there, not even for the fans. And here's where things can get difficult in the latter stages. This is a great senior class for Boise. Kellen Moore had one of the great careers of any quarterback in college football history. Let's go through some of that. 49-3 straight up. Number one in interception percentage, the good way. Number two in touchdown passes. Number three in passing efficiency. Number four completion percentage. Number five in passing yards. Those are five major career categories. He's in the top five. He's going to go out at 50-3 in his career after they win tonight. But here's your problem. You want Moore and the seniors to step up and play real well in their final game, but you're not going to get the full 60 minutes out of Moore, most likely. Here's this crescendo moment where you get a big lead. You send Moore out there sometime early in the fourth quarter, and then you bring him off the field to get a big ovation from the fans. It would be a great moment if you're a Boise fan or if you're a football purist. It's a great moment. It's not a great moment if you lay 14 and the game's sitting on 14 when they pull him out. There's that little conundrum that could be a problem in the latter stages.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're going to pull Moore out up 14. Maybe up 28 they might pull him out in the fourth quarter. I don't think they'll put him out if he's up 14. And Boise certainly has to develop a quarterback for next year. But in my mind, you know, the Broncos were disappointed last year. They still came to Las Vegas, and boy, they played well. Maybe not their most crisp offensive game, but they beat Utah 26-3. If you lay the points with Boise, obviously you cash your ticket with relative ease in that ballgame. And I'm not convinced this Arizona State team's, they're certainly, I don't think they're any better than last year's Utah team. They might be worse. I mean, the whole issue here is how focused is Arizona State? Remember, this Sun Devils team was 5-1. They beat USC. They were looking at a trip to the Pac-12 championship game right in the eye. They were looking at a BCS bowl game at that stage of the season. And they were kind of like Illinois, a team that they beat earlier in the year. The team that they lost to earlier in the year, the only loss they suffered to that point, in the sense of once the bubble burst, man, it really burst for Arizona State. Their only win in their last six ball games came against a 3-10 Colorado team. That came at home. Everything else, loss. And the way they lost those games, they were in them. They found a way to lose. Again, the undisciplined plays, the penalties, the mistakes. That's Arizona State. That's what they've been under Dennis Erickson. I don't expect anything different from the Sun Devils tonight.
So let's get specific now. If you watch Tuesday's show, we said, go play the Houston Texans over Indianapolis now. Game was down at 5.5. Put that as the Tuesday play of the day, so there's your reminder. There's one play of the day already in play tonight on the Texans. And the reason why you should be watching Vegas Sports Day is on Tuesday, Italy at a much better price and what's sitting out there right now. We're going to do that for you on some of the bowl games next week, get you ahead of the line moves. But Teddy, we got another spot to make money tonight, and we're going to force you guys to stay up a little bit later to do it.
Yeah, you talked about the 1:30 start time for the kids coming from Auburn to travel out to Hawaii tonight. Of course, that means if you're on the East Coast, yeah, you're up till 3:30 or 4 in the morning watching this one on the four-letter network. But the play of the day for Thursday, we're going to take our shot here with Hawaii plus 1.5 on the College Hoops Hardwoods against Auburn. Again, Hawaii plus 1.5. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for a busy Thursday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. From Alinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the game. Stay up late. We'll see you again tomorrow.